Welcome to the situation report for October 14th. That's a little sticks. I think it's fitting for the current environment that we're in, especially because everything is an illusion. I was asked over the weekend, and I think I put it in my update on Substack, which I haven't had a chance to do today. If you had a chance to kill Hitler, would you go back and do it? Or would you go back and shoot every single one of the people that made Hitler possible? Interesting question. And I listened to almost all, I got about an hour left. I shouldn't say all of it. I posted the link to it in the, it's in the comment section. I didn't put it in the description, mainly because I'm old as fuck and I forgot about it. But interviews, it was an interview with Dr. Jack Cruz. And I'd never heard of this guy before, but Alex Craner sent me the interview and said, you have to listen to this. And he does a really good job of putting together a synopsis of why we're in the situation we're in, what we're dealing with, and how to win. And he doesn't tie in, you know, aliens. He doesn't go down that road. He doesn't go down the road of, you know, the satanic cabal. He puts in very plain terms, which I tend to agree with. And that is, I've said a million times that there's these loose coalitions of people that are working together to do things. Because the stuff he's talking about is here in the U.S. It's a four-hour interview. But I highly suggest you listen to it. Because he goes over a number of different things that I didn't know about. I'd heard General Hodges when I was a captain. I heard his name several times. He's the guy that created Oak Ridge. He's a guy that worked with Oppenheimer to create the first atomic bomb. And he, Jack talks about him as one of the biggest war criminals in the history of humanity, which I think is a very interesting, you know, conversation point when you think about it. But when you listen to him talk about it and why he talks about it, like, okay, that makes sense. And it explains a lot about the current deep state that we're dealing with. And he says some of the same things that I've been saying. And part of it is that all leads back to money. All roads lead back to currency. Everything these people do leads back to currency. Everything that we deal with leads back to currency and leads back to money. But he talks about something I had never heard before, which I thought was priceless. I think that's how I'm pronouncing it. Aladolio money and title. And it's, I think I'm pronouncing that right. It's interesting to, because I'd never heard those terms before. I'd seen them several times in print. I'd seen them several times in different presentations. But I'd never really had it tied together to the current situation. And he does a very good job of encapsulating my psychotic fucking hatred of the Windsor family, because they're really Germans. And they changed their name after World War I, actually before World War I, before or after World War I, they changed their name to protect themselves, which is why I hate them with a flaming hot passion. Not because they're German, but because they're frauds. And the whole Bilderberg group and that whole group of malcontents, the Davos group, they're all offshoots of the Windsor family and the city of London and that whole group of malcontents. They're all pedophiles, all of them, including the royal family, all pedophiles, fucking deviants. And if you think I'm kidding, just go look at who Chucky was friends with. One of the most notorious and prolific mass murderers of children in the UK's history. And Chucky was friends with him. Guilt by association? Absolutely. Any proof of it? No. But if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, it's a duck. And at the end of the day, he talks about a bunch of things. But the thing that I heard three things. The first one was, is that the sun does a lot of good for us. And he talks about mitochondria and how the sun, water, and electricity all help us. And our how our systems are compromised by the shit in our food and the blue lights around us and blue lights in the screens, et cetera, et cetera. He talks about all that, puts it all together in really, really good form. And the other thing he said that I clued in on was, I'm here for a purpose. I think I was put here for this moment. I agree with that. And the third thing he said was that I was always a rebel, even in the medical system, even as a student, as a rebel. And I would agree with that because I was gonna say that, Mike. I knew you were gonna shamelessly pitch that show. I was gonna get to it, fucker. Anyway, I think I was put on this planet for this moment too. I don't know what role I am supposed to play in this moment, but I was put here for this moment. And he talks about how we always push the grain and he always went against the establishment. I have literally, and one of the things he says that I wholeheartedly agree with is that he doesn't act like a neurosurgeon. I don't act like a lieutenant colonel. I don't talk like a lieutenant colonel. I don't act like a lieutenant colonel. I do in some instances, but I'm not. I'm the lieutenant colonel that makes other O6s and general officers fucking cringe because I say what's on my mind. And they want LTCs to be these conformists that do exactly what they're told and have a good command presence, but really they do exactly what they're told. I never bought into any of that bullshit. In fact, I was always poking senior officers in the chest saying, why the fuck are we doing this? This is stupid. And you could ask my guys. I was in a room full of Navy officers, senior Navy officers as a major. And I learned a valuable lesson in Iraq that stayed with me through my entire career. And that is, he who has the purse strings calls the shots. And so we went out to PACOM out on Oahu. I know it was tough duty, but we persevered to endure. And we went out to support PACOM, and we were assigned to Makalapa, which is where the Joint Network Comm Center is at PAC Fleet. And we were working for the Navy at PAC Fleet. And I remember being in this room full of these senior officers. One of them actually turned out to be a good friend after a couple of years of working with him. But it was adversarial at first because I was in a room full of them. They're like, yeah, we're going to break up your team and you guys are going to go do staff work. And I said, that's not going to happen. And the room stopped. And my battle buddy, who later passed away from cancer in 2013, was sitting next to me. And this is like 2007, 2008. And I said, it's never going to happen. I'm like, I don't work for you, Commander. I work for the G3 of the Army, and the G3 says this is what we're going to do. So we're going to do that mission either here or somewhere else. But I was told to report here, and I was told by the G3 himself to report here, so I will report here. But I don't work for you. I work for the G3. And if you have a problem with that, you can call the general. And the general will tell you exactly what I'm about to tell you. My dollars brought us here. Our training dollars are paying for this. Our training doctrine and our training plan says this. That's what we're going to do. You can either embrace it and put us to work, or you can be a pain in the ass. And this can go through 10 or 12 levels at the Pentagon before the G3, the Army, comes back and says to the G3, or sorry, the four-star here, go fuck yourself. So it's your choice. But that's how this is going to play out. And we can save ourselves some time, and you can just figure out how to put us on your staff, and we can work as a team, or you can call the G3. The G3 will call the PAC fleet commander, and they'll have a dick waving contest, and I'll end up winning. And they went the hard route. 24 hours later, my battle buddy at the time was like looking for jobs and truck driving and, you know, working at grocery stores and shit like that. And I was like, just relax. Everybody's gonna wave their dick around. It's gonna come out. And we're gonna be just fine. After that, we were good. And, you know, like all my enlisted guys remember it, because there was two or three of them in the room with me, and I wasn't backing down. And part of it was just due to the fact that I wasn't going to let my soldiers be staff weenies when these guys were technical experts. Why would I, you know, move a bunch of technical experts into stupid staff positions, pushing paper for an exercise when the real world was more important? And it turned out that during that exercise, my guys found a real world breach in the system and ran it all the way to ground. And after that, we were rock stars. But I wasn't about to let these staff weenies push my highly technical crew into a bunch of bullshit positions. And sometimes you just got to stand your ground. Because at the end of the day, what matters is not about you. It's about everybody around you and making sure you set conditions so that they can succeed. And at the time, I really didn't give two shits about my career because I was so burned out with the Army anyway and the Army politics. Like, fuck it. Full send. And Jack talks about that. He talks about, I was fully committed. He's talking about a patient came in with a brain injury and he was fully committed. And he told the attending to get the fuck out. Get out of here. You want to throw me out later? Fine. But I'm going to do this right now because this is important. And he talks about how it was a defining moment in his life. And it was. And the cool part about it is that you hear him processing through his own shit, right? He's talking through it. And you can relate to stuff that you've done in your life. And at the end of the day, the part that struck me, and again, I still got an hour left in a four-hour interview. The part that struck me was he didn't say it openly. He just kind of circled around it because I don't think he was trying to say it. But he echoed something that I've been saying for a long time. And that is, we all have a part to play. We're all good at something. We all bring something to the table. Bringing that something to the table is what's important, especially considering the situation we're in. Because nobody knows how this is going to go. And there are probably 10 different avenues this can go. But nobody really knows which way it's going to go. And why it's important, especially right now, is that I talked on my Saturday update on Substack that the narratives are changing. They've changed the narrative from a black swan event and this major catastrophe, which they had been talking months and months and months. And they've changed their talking point. Their talking point now is, well, if Trump wins, we're all going to need bodyguards because we're going to have to make the tough decision to make sure he never gets in office. They're telegraphing exactly what they're doing. And today, Gateway Pundit published an article about Mark Elias, yet another treasonous fuck. But Mark Elias using lawfare against Trump, that's exactly what they're going to do. They've moved away from some catastrophic event and making Harris look presidential. They've given up on abandoning those plans. And now they're moving to, they're going to let Trump win. They're going to take the down ballot. Then they're going to use all of the freshmen to decertify the election and then install somebody that they want. At least that's their rhetoric. Now, whether or not that happens or not, I don't know. There's still 3 weeks to the election and a lot can happen in 3 weeks. In fact, today, the Japanese released the replicator vaccine. I think they inoculated 8 or 10 people today. Yeah, we'll see how fast that spreads like fucking wildfire in Japan in close quarters. That's not by design. And then Flint today said something about economic collapse. Remember when I said there was multiple lines of operation converging to a culmination point? That's exactly what you're seeing. And the reason why the Jack Cruz interview is so important is that he puts the pieces together of how we got here and who was running the show. And if we could go back in time and deal with the perpetrators, that's one thing. But we are where we are. And now we need to come together. And the good thing about last week, I don't know if any of you caught this or not, but there's two significant events that happened last week that further swung the pendulum in our direction. The first one was the Trump conviction is about to be overturned. They knew all along that it would be overturned. They didn't care. They wanted to be able to say he was a convicted felon. It never got traction. It never had the impact they wanted it to have. And it never really sunk in with the public. And then the second thing was that Obama came out and was literally chastising black men for not voting for Harris. And that unleashed a torrent of backlash. Remember, I talked about unintended consequences. This is one of those unintended consequences. This is when you are so full of ego that you forget who you're talking to in your base and you alienate your base in yet another way by sending the wrong message. And at the end of the day, guess what? It's blowing up in their face. Her numbers are plummeting. His numbers are plummeting. His Twitter is brutal. And it's not even white men. It's black men that are going after him, as it should be. But that's not even the worst part. The October surprise, the disclosures that I've been talking about are coming out. And to me, the disclosures about Harris and Waltz are noise. Everybody knew the guy was a pedophile and blew horses. Everybody knew that. That's a widely known secret. Just like everybody knew that camel toe or whatever you want to call her, cum guzzler or whatever you want to call her, she blew her way to the top. That's a fact. I'm talking about the disclosures that are coming out of the Diddy stuff. That is interesting to say the least, but I don't think this is the really toxic admissions. And the prosecution part of this, you really have to scratch your head and go, okay, I'm not sure I buy into all this, but we'll see. I'm gonna be cautiously optimistic that some of those disclosures that come out around Diddy will be shocking to a lot of people. And like I said, it's not going to be from the establishment. It's going to be from the victims who were there and witnessed it, and somebody held onto a tape. That will be the, let's just say that'll be the nail in the coffin. Because the thing that they fear the most is that the American public unites as one. And that is slowly starting to happen. You have people on the left that are moving towards the middle because they realize they've been lied to. You have entire cultures and subcultures that have been lied to and have figured it out finally. And Obama's speech nailed the coffin shut. And they will not recover from this from an information perspective. They just won't recover. And this was not done on purpose. I think he legitimately thought that he was going to inspire black men to switch sides. And all he did was galvanize the public against him and against Camel Toe. When you look at the bigger picture of where we are right now, things are starting to move in the right direction and people don't realize it. Look, it's easy to get demoralized. But you have to remember, everything we're seeing is illusion. And Jack Cross also says one thing that I completely agree with. 99% of the influencers have taken the money and they're playing the game with whoever's out there. Look at all the grifters. Look at all the bullshit being pushed. Look at the fact that the system's full of garbage. That should tell you right there that they've used as much influence as they could to try and confuse the public. And it's part of the reason why the people like Jack Kraus are starting to come out of the woodwork. Because these are guys that don't have an agenda. They see the truth, they speak the truth, they talk to the truth, they don't talk around it, and they say the things that nobody else is saying. You think Joe Rogan would ever say any of the shit I'm talking about? No, because it's fucking plutonium. It's kryptonite for him. I don't care if he gets, you know, a million views every time he does a show and he has 100 million people listening to him. If you don't talk about the core issues, it means you're part of the system. And maybe you aren't a part of the system openly, but tacitly you're part of a system because you're not saying the things that people need to hear. That in and of itself means you're a part of the system. And that's what he talks, that's what Jack Kraus talks about, is that the infiltration of the system is so complete that they took the news 30 years ago and paid everybody, which is what I said. The CIA is embedded in every agency all the way across the fucking planet. They have such a highly effective machine that's working that we're fighting against, that the system in and of itself has to crash completely to be able to rebuild something new. And this time, we take it all the way to the finish line. We get rid of the parasitic elite. We get rid of all the royal families. We get rid of all the royal bloodlines. And we don't screw around this time. And then we put systems in place so that when psychopaths like Bill Gates or General Groves comes out of the woodwork, guess what? We deal with them swiftly and decisively. If this guy really is the architect of the current deep state and the CIA, and he's the guy that produced Alan Dulles, which I don't think is true. I think Alan Dulles is a product of the Bush family, and they just found a marriage of convenience at work because they're both psychopaths. But we're dealing with a death cult. These are people that believe that all but 400 or 500 million people need to survive on the planet. That is not a recipe for realistic governance. And they spend the first hour talking about blue light and how blue light affects your dopamine levels and affects your dopamine sensors. And it dumps you down. Think about a casino. And he talks about the Jewish mob. You know, you listen to the first 15 minutes, and I guarantee you, the first 15 minutes, by the time you're done, you're thinking, yep, it's all the Jews. But that's not what he's saying. What he's really saying is the Jewish mafia, Mossad, and the more radical arm of the Israeli government and the clandestine services are the ones that drove a lot of events over the past 70 years. And that Mossad was heavily involved in the death of Kennedy. I firmly believe that, firmly, because Kennedy was going to shut down their nuclear program, and they were not about to have that. And the 9/11 attacks, Mossad, and it's widely known, which, you know, 10 years ago, if you would have said Mossad, people would have said, you're crazy. But now with all the evidence of the art students that were in New York City and training a lot of these guys to supposedly fly planes. I don't know how much of that I believe, but the reality is we're seeing that the intelligence service, clandestine services, as well as the military industrial complex have been behind a lot of this from day one. But he talks about DARPA, and I want to talk about DARPA for a second, because one of our Achilles heels as not just a culture, but as a population, is that we always underestimate how smart our enemy is. We always assume they're dumber than we are. And in this case, he says it the best. These are brilliant people that are working to do all of these things in tandem. And it takes a lot of brilliant people to think of these things, one of which is capturing the news media. He's right. Takes a lot of very, very smart people to think through some of this insidious shit. So just because they're working in a system doesn't make them dumb. And we always underestimate our enemies to our detriment. And we have to assume that we're catching up to the party and that the things we're hearing and seeing are things they want us to know, or that somebody inside the system that wants the system to fail wants us to know. And we can't assume that anything we see is real. We can't assume that anything we see is not staged or is not planted. And we have to question everything. And he talks about how the Vegas crowd really came about and what their intent was and why. And he talks about the Cuban Revolution. He goes by the numbers. And after the first 2 hours, if your eyes aren't, you know, glossing over with Jesus, that's a lot of information, then I would ask you to consider something else. Because when I talk about strata of the elite, that strata has been manipulated for centuries. And now they've had marriages of convenience and alliances that are spanning the globe. And it's not just the quote unquote deep state that's doing this. And I say that because when you get to a certain level of strata and a certain level of opulence, affluence, you look at people differently. And you look at yourself differently. They don't look at people, average people, as human beings. They look at you as cattle. And the term useless eater, people were shocked when they heard that. You shouldn't be shocked by that. Because we're dealing with a group of people that have been in power and had affluence for hundreds of years. The banking system in and of itself, these people have been affluent for hundreds of years. And the piece that's often overlooked, that is so important here, is the fact that they look at each other like they're vermin, right? I'm better than you. You're not better than I am. I'm smarter than you. I'm prettier than you, whatever the case may be. But when you get to that level, and the same is true in Hollywood, right? The realpolitik part of this is that in Hollywood, it's the same thing. You know, they're all doing the same shit. They're all doing the same nefarious things, but they all look at each other like they're dirt under their feet. And that's the human nature part of this that's often overlooked, is that even though they may have an alliance, they may be working together, doesn't mean they like each other. Doesn't mean the alliance is going to hold. Doesn't mean it can stress test and survive a stress test, which is what we're seeing right now. Across the planet, we're seeing a stress test of the system that they have because they think they can control chaos. You can't control chaos. Once you spin out of control, and it's just like an aircraft, once you take the aircraft outside of the flight envelope, meaning you take it past its known limits, it's not going to respond the same way, and it may not respond at all. And once you lose control, you're riding it to the ground because you're not getting control back. And that's where we're headed. They've architected this situation. They've architected this moment in time for the system to go off the rails. And not just here, planetary. This is planetary, folks. This is not just here. It's just we're the backstop. And because we're the backstop, we have to look at this differently. We have to act differently. And when we get down to it and the actual events happening, that's the deep survival moment. That's the part where people are going to have to step up and start making decisions. Because everything we've known to that point, at least if I think it's going to go the way I think it's going to go, everything to that point will be pretty much out the window. And from that point on, it literally is going to be a dogfight all the way through. And I can tell you that I've been in an aircraft where it would not respond to inputs. I've been in high winds. I've literally been in situations where I've had downdrafts. I've been in mountain waves where the aircraft doesn't respond at all. I mean, if a divine intervention, I think, is what saved me in a couple instances. In fact, I was coming back from Wenatchee, and I was on a beach No, I was in a beach bonanza. And this aircraft had been up-engined, and it was a friend of mine, and he was sleeping, and I was flying over, and we hit a mountain wave. And you, when you, if you know anything about Washington, when you fly from Seattle to Wenatchee, you basically fly through the mountains at 9,500 feet, so you can stay under 10,000 feet. And it's flying at like 9,600 feet, and I hit a mountain wave between these two mountains, and there's not a hell of a lot of room in there. And the aircraft was descending, and I was at full power, and the aircraft was descending. I couldn't do anything about it. Wouldn't respond to any inputs into the controls. Rudder pedals weren't doing anything. Just no control whatsoever. And finally, at about 300 feet AGL, the aircraft started to respond. And literally, I flew on the deck for probably 10 miles before I was able to gain altitude. Full power. And we figured the aircraft burns about, I don't know, 10 and a half gallons of fuel an hour. I think we burned 10 and a half gallons of fuel in like 40 minutes because we were trying to stay off the ground. And that's why I say, even with your best efforts, when you think you have control, you don't have control. And we're seeing the start of that right now. They're starting to lose control. They're starting to see the effects of unintended consequences, and it's only going to get worse from here. And their narratives have changed, which is why I'm saying there's a possibility now. I would say 50-50 that we make it to the election. And the other part of that is, as they get more and more frantic, I'm not going to say desperate, frantic. Because remember, these are people that have been in control for a very, very long time. These are people that don't know what it's like to not be in control. And that's a very, very powerful recipe for something really fucking bad to happen. Because you're talking about people that have always had complete control. And what do control freaks try and do when they lose control? They try and exert more control. And that moment is coming. How it comes out, what it looks like, who the hell knows? Does it matter? No, not really. What matters is how we react and whether or not we band together and whether or not we're ungovernable. Because if we go along with whatever is put out, whether it's lockdowns, mask mandate, doesn't matter. If we go along with any of it, we sign up for the whole control system. At this time, you can't sign up for any of it, not one piece of it. And the flip side of that is, once we get over to the point where we've pushed back to the point where they stop, then we have to keep pushing to get accountability. The thing that you need to really come to grips with: the system that we have known forever and ever is dead. It is never coming back. And most importantly, the system that you took for granted that was working for you has been completely weaponized against you. Every institution is weaponized against you, including the healthcare system. And you can't for one instant think that the healthcare system or doctors are there for you. They are not. Don't assume anything now moving forward. Assume everybody's hostile and work your way back towards they've earned some trust. And, you know, Jack Cruz talks about Jack Dorsey, and he talks about Sergey Brin's wife and JFK Jr.'s RFK Jr.'s running mate. Can't think of her name off the top of my head. But she's got a kid that's affected by autism, which is, well, we all know, a result set of the vaccines. And so he talks about these very, very tenuous relationships at first when he talks to these people, because he's like me. You know, if I talked to, if I, well, I wouldn't really talk to Jack Dorsey. I'd probably beat him within an inch of his life if I ever met the guy, because I have so much animus towards him. But he talks about how he's not nice to people, and he wasn't nice to RFK's running mate. And she understood when he was talking that, you know, he's like, she got a dose of reality. Just like he talks about the CEO of YouTube who died of cancer just this last year. They were all put into this program called the Marshmallow Experiment, where they basically are taught to follow orders unconditionally. And he says all the Silicon Valley CEOs all went through it, and that their parents were heavily involved in this MK Ultra stuff. Are you starting to see a pattern that everything in our society that we thought were people being successful is just a construct of the elite putting forth a persona that we all bought into and we all believe is real? Nicole Shanahan, thank you. Thanks, Trey. Appreciate that. Yeah. Everything we saw was a construct. That's why I've been talking about it for the last 4 months, is that everything's a construct. Everything's an illusion. And it was illusion created so that people would accept these things and not ask any question. And Americans don't ask any questions. They don't think past one layer. In fact, they go only one layer deep, and usually they don't look past that. And this is literally the problem with our whole society, is that nobody does any deep, they don't do any deep research. You go one layer deep and then you move on. That's why we got into this situation, because the whole, you know, country's been dumbed down to the point where the only thing they care about is football. And the other part of COVID, and this is where I differ with him, is that I don't think that COVID was just about compliance. I think it had multiple lines of operation that they were testing. And I think that they were surprised at the compliance that they got initially. But it was also about building the infrastructure for control and monitoring. It was also about building the infrastructure for confinement. And it was also about building the infrastructure for 15-minute cities, or at least laying the groundwork for the foundations of that. In addition to that, he spent a lot of time talking about how they set conditions so that they could get people to comply, and that the vaccines are set up so people will comply with the new financial system. Again, all roads go back to currency, which I agree with. I thought that part of the experiment was over compliance as well as a few other things. The biggest one is building the control grid. But the part where we differ is, I don't think it was just about compliance. I think there was a lot of other facets to it that they used all at one time. And he's, you know, his premises are spot on. In fact, I think he's fucking right over target. And, you know, he talks about how raw he is. And you've heard me say, that's why I'm raw. Like, he's like, I don't mind calling a dumbass a dumbass. In fact, I enjoy calling dumb people and telling them why they're fucking stupid. Yeah, I do that all the time on Twitter. In fact, Twitter, I am like over the top raw on Twitter, just because I can't handle any more stupid. You can't charge for it on Twitter. I wish I could. Shit, I'd be a rich man by now. But you can't charge for it. And the hard part in this current situation is we're going to see more of this moving forward. It's going to get dumber and dumber, and you're going to see people do stupid things, and it's going to drive you crazy. But the thing that's important with all of this information is now it's time to spread the wealth and get people to realize, not that this stuff has happened, but that the fact that the cards have been stacked against us for generations before we even got here. And now the quintessential thing for us to do is to put our differences aside and realize that this is not about politics. This is about humanity. This is about the republic. This is about our way of life and reminding people who we are and what we are. Because after World War II, when the defense industrial complex took over, they basically dumbed down the population to forget who we were. And that, if we do anything, is the most important thing that we can do for our entire country right now, is remind people who we are and what we are and what we stood for. Because it won't just erode away the political arguments. It will also erode the animosity that other cultures have towards us. Because most people across the planet remember what America used to be and what America should be. And they saw what we did, not just in World War II. They saw what we did during the Depression and how we came out of that. And it wasn't about the politics or the programs or any of the BS that was put in place. It was about the resolve of our culture and the fact that our culture was more important and the Republic was more important than the individual. And that's the part that people need to see. Something bigger than themselves. It's human nature for us to want to help other people. Most people don't get off hurting other people. We've all done it. But the question is, when you've hurt other people, did you get off on it? Did you really enjoy it? Or did you fucking hate yourself for hurting people? I can tell you, the most, you talk to any service member, they'll tell you they fucking hated hurting other people. It's the worst part of the job. It's not the best part of the job. It's the worst part of the job. But you do it because you're told, and it's burned in your soul, that you're doing it to protect the sovereignty of the nation, the sovereignty of the Constitution. And that's why you do it. But it doesn't mean you like it. Sure, there's people that get off on it. But I would rather imagine that the bulk of the population doesn't get off on hurting people. And that's what we need to remind people of, is that. And if anything, I would say that the hurricanes have reminded us who the fuck we are and what we're about. And that is yet another unintended consequence that the elite have forgotten about. Because the one thing that always triumphs over evil, every single time, is empathy and love. Always trumps evil. Always. And I saw Iraqis put up with a mountain of bullshit. But they always came back to the same thing. They weren't going to live under oppression anymore because they had seen what it was like to be free. And they didn't want any part of that shit anymore. So when they started to deal with things on their own accord, in their own way, people would end up in trunks and they'd be driven all parts of Iraq and dumped. And they did it in their own way. And when we got out of the way and let them deal with their culture in their own way, guess what happened? All that Sharia law and all that other bullshit didn't survive. It didn't last long. They ripped all the banners down. They ripped all the martyr flags down. And they beat all the clerics within an inch of their life and basically said, knock it off. And that's what Americans are getting ready to do. And most importantly, the thing that most of us forget about is that this country wasn't started by people who wanted war. It was started by people who were tired of the taxation and tired of living under somebody's boot. And they saw how the British monarchy was basically treating the U.S. like a slave colony. They didn't want any part of that. Self-governance always wins. Always. May take a while, but it always wins. Guys like Hussein, Castro, they're only in power. They only lasted in power because they had people supporting them from the outside. In fact, Castro wouldn't have lasted 10 years if he didn't have outside support. And who do you think supported him? Go follow the money. And I think you'll be surprised who supported him. Just like Stalin, just like Hussein, just like Pol Pot. If you go look back at all these despicable dictators, you will see it's connected to the city of London in every fucking case. Always follow the money. And you will find out what the real agenda is. But if left to their own devices, Dictators don't last very long. Question is, who's funding North Korea? Who's keeping that douchebag in power? And why? That's the thing you got to ask. So if I change my opinion on the election, no, I think anything's possible. But I would say I've upped the probability that we'll actually get to Election Day. We may even get past Election Day. But it really depends on how frantic these people get. I'm not going to say desperate, because desperate just doesn't fit it. These are people, like I said, that have been in control. If you don't know what that looks like, then you're in for a real treat. Because I've worked with control freaks pretty much my whole life. I was married to one of them. Every time that woman thought she was losing control, she was absolutely out of her fucking mind trying to get control of everything around her. Sometimes I just sit back and watch and go, let me know how that works out for you. It's not going to end well. But that's what we're up against. And it's easy to get demoralized. Hell, it's easy to look at all the stuff going on and get demoralized. But remember, we are going to come out of this a stronger country. We're going to come out of this and liberate humanity. Do I know how it's going to work? Hell no, I don't know how it's going to work. And I don't even know what it looks like. I don't even know if I want to know what it looks like. But I know this. The people that are in charge now are not going to be in charge when this is all over. And we're not going to replace them with another set of assholes that have a bunch of money from 100 years or 200 years of power and then telling us they're going to do something different. We're not playing that game this time. We're taking this all the way to the fucking end of the line. We're riding a train all the way to the fucking station, and we're going to liberate the whole planet. This time we don't fuck around. Because every time in the past that we've stopped short, things got worse and worse and worse. Look where we are now. We're in a situation where everything's crazy. Everything's an illusion. Everything's gaslit. Everybody's on the take. Now's the time to draw a line in the sand. And that line in the sand is very simple. You steal the down ballot, revolution. You steal the presidency, revolution. You don't surrender, you die. That's the game. There's no other game. You either fight or you die on your knees. That's your choice. The only choices you have at this point. There's not going to be any negotiations, because you don't negotiate with the devil. There's not going to be any deals, because you don't make a deal with the devil. And there's not going to be any plea bargains, because again, you don't make a deal with the devil. You either fight or you surrender. Those are your choices. And that's it. And we already know what the day is. It's Election Day. If we get there, great. If we don't get there, great. We'll just see what the control freaks have in store. I can tell you that I still have a lot of people telling me something big is coming. I agree. I don't know what that something big is, but something big is coming. I would rather imagine that this replicator vaccine that they just released in Japan is going to do a bunch of damage in a very short period of time. And we'll see the effects of that probably within a few weeks. Because if you don't know anything about the replicator vaccine, it basically allows the spike protein to shed to other people. Remember shedding? Remember that game? Oh, it only goes into one spot, doesn't transfer throughout your body. Yeah, it's funny how the RV40 that Cruz talks about is throughout people's body, and it's really, really, you know, concentrated in the reproductive organs. Imagine that. And that the lipid nanoparticle is really the bioweapon. When you start looking at the bigger picture of this, you start to see how it's very easy, how they could do a bunch of different things all at once for that main event. And we're going to see very soon the main event. We'll see. I could be wrong. In fact, I'd love to be wrong. I'd love for this replicator vaccine to do nothing and people not take it. I'd love for the system to collapse on its own and we don't have to pick up arms. We just pick up the people on the other side. But I don't think it's going to go that way. At least I have been preparing like it's going to go that way. And I'm not going to stop now just because, you know, things may go a different way. Not that I'm going to precipitate it. I'm just saying that I'm expecting rain and I'm going to prepare for rain, whether rain or not happens. And you should too. Especially now. Closer we get, the more you should be using your shit. Last night we were testing radios and reminded myself why I fucking hate radio people. And just so all of you smart asses out there know, I did do the license for the GMRS, so I'll be a W for a short period of time until I, you know, decide to finish the ham radio shit, which I gotta tell you is nails on a chalkboard to go through that. So if it wasn't necessary, I wouldn't be doing it at all. Man. Can't tell you how much that gets under my skin. And the worst part of it is trying to figure out why the radio isn't doing what it's supposed to do. And the instructions are in Chinese. My God, talk about an exercise of frustration. I think that the real war is going to be to build American products that are intuitive and get rid of all this fucking Chinesium in our country that doesn't work right. My God, talk about unintuitive. Jesus, use a Chinese radio. I know Matt Ever talks about the biofangs and he wrote the book and he's got all the inside knowledge. Doesn't mean it's not frustrating, man. And I wouldn't even have wanted a combo next to me last night. God, that's that frustrated. But hey, we got the radios to work, figured out the distance we can go. We figured out what the optimum distance is. We figured out what the optimum frequencies to use are. All's good. But it took quite a bit to get to that point. My God. Oh. And if there would have been a combo talking about, you know, specific radios and frequencies and meters, he would have been beaten to death on that spot. My God. It's like me petting a cat with a ball peen hammer. That's what that exercise would have been. Oh. That's the other question I got. Let me just answer this question so I get this out of the way. And all of you that are cat fans, I'm just going to tell you right now, you're not going to like what I'm about to say. And you know who you are. And you know that I know that you know I know you are who you are. So let me just get this out of the way. I fucking hate cats. Cats are like narcissistic women. Pet kitty, go away. Pet kitty, go away. Feed me, go away. Yeah. I like petting cats with a ball peen hammer. I can't stand them. Narcissistic fuckheads. Oh, God. Okay, I got that out of the way. I had to answer that question because I've gotten that question a bunch of times. Well, I don't know why people keep asking me if I like cats. I never did figure that out. My God. Oh. And then there's that whole, I'm going to scratch the shit out of everything you own in the middle of the night while you're sleeping. Never got that one either. What's attractive about that? Oh, my cat's out there scratching my $10,000 couch. Isn't that lovely? Good kitty. Right through the uprights. Ah, God. Anyway. So, yeah, that's true, Paul. Haitians do look at. Okay, that was funny. that's why I can't hurt cats, because I fucking hate them. That's why. God. Anyway, okay, enough about cats. I answered that question. Oh, too funny. Here's what I want to leave you with tonight. As dark as things may seem at times, the one thing you got to hold on to, and the one thing that keeps me focused, is what I want this place to look like on the other side. I don't get wrapped up in the doom and gloom of this could happen. You know, do I talk to it? Yeah. Do I think that everything's going to suck on the other side? No. I know in the deepest, deepest parts of my soul that these people are not going to be successful no matter how hard they try. And that always keeps me focused. And I've said this before, and it bears mentioning. For all of you who've never heard this before, bear with me. War is a marathon. It is not a sprint. There is no quick way to the finish line. There is no quick remedy for all the things in front of us. So you have to pace yourself. part of that is having a vision of what you want on the other side, so you stay focused on the vision on the other side of what you want this to be. And there's an example from World War II that I go back to often. And it was actually Colin Powell that told this when he came to the joint school I was at. I mean, this is a guy that walked in the room and introduced each one of the officers that shook his hand. He knew our faces, he knew our names, he knew our spouses' names, he knew our children's names. He had done his research on everybody in the class. And he walked in and he said, you know, after D-Day, did Ike ever have any doubt that we would lose the war? And Colin Powell said, no. He was standing just off of Normandy Beach after the invasion, just when we were about to take France completely. And he was standing with, I think, Bradley and Patton. And Patton said something about, we can still lose this war. And Ike said, no, we can't. And they said, why? And he pointed to the logistics and all these trucks going by with stuff going to the front. He goes, that's why we can't lose this war. Because we have the one thing no one else has. And we thought through how to do this. And God's on our side. He was right. Sound logic for a really smart dude. And Eisenhower was an administrator. He was not a tactician like Patton. And he was able to see and know and believe that we would win. And that's how I view the situation, is that we are going to win. Is it going to suck? Yes. Are we going to learn things that we didn't know? Absolutely. Are we going to see things that we don't want to see? Absolutely. But on the other side of this, we're going to have a generation or two that are going to be hard as fucking nails. And they are not going to put up with any of this bullshit again. Under any circumstances, they will put their foot down and deal with things in a very, very harsh manner when this is all said and done. And it's because of what we're about to go through. And will the Republic look differently? Probably. Does that mean it's going to be dead? No. It means that out of the ashes will come something stronger. Because the difference between now and the time the new republic is born is that the European Eurofags will be, you know, all the global homos will be dead. And they won't be able to influence politics in this country like they have for the last 200 years. And then we will go and we will liberate the rest of the planet. And we'll start with Canada. And then we'll move to the rest of the world, liberate the rest of the planet. At this time, we make sure that all of these satanic fucks are gone and that we restore the rule of law across the planet. Whatever form of government that they want to take, that's fine. Whatever national identity they want to take, that's fine. But from when this is over, moving forward, no more genocide. We don't allow genocide ever again. This period of time will go down in history as probably one of those most violent periods in our entire history. Is it necessary? Probably. Is that the next order of battle? Probably. It is what it is. But at the end of the day, when we're done, it'll be done. So focus on what you want this place to look like on the other side. That's where your effort should be. Don't focus on the doom and gloom. Don't get wrapped up in the October surprise and all the normal bullshit. That's a script. It's a script they always play before an election. We know there's going to be violence because there always is. Focus on things that matter. But the thing I want to leave you with too is that Cruz talks about, and again, I highly suggest all of you take the 4 hours and listen to this, because he talks about something that I talk about all the time, and that's putting technology down. I put technology down for the simple reason that I can't look at tech all day. I work in the computer industry. And I work in tech, and I can tell you that I need to get away from my desk and just leave tech alone for hours. And the challenge for all of you is to put the tech away, put the TV away, and do something that doesn't involve a blue screen. And after you listen to him talk about a blue screen, you'll understand why I'm saying it. And then you'll understand why I've been saying it. He puts the science behind it. There's not a lot of math here. Don't turn it into calculus. Just pick something healthier to do besides sitting on your ass watching TV, and go out and do something. Now is the time to do stuff. Don't sit around and think about it. Do it. And you will feel a hell of a lot better when you get to the other side. But remember, make human connections. That's who we are. That's what we are as humans. We make human connections. We meet people, we talk to people, we interact with people face to face, interpersonally. We don't do it over technology. And in fact, if you look at some of your best interactions throughout your entire life, I guarantee it's going to be one of those moments where you're sitting with people that you care about and you have a really good time. And that's the things you remember. I'm telling you, that's the things you remember. And that's why it's so important right now. We have to get back to our roots. We have to get back to who we are as a people, not just as a country, as a people. And we have to learn how to interact interpersonally again, because it's been bred out of us. And that's going to be our challenge moving forward, as well as keeping politics out of our day-to-day conversations. That's the most important thing. That's who we are. God bless everyone. I'll be back. Where are we at? We're Monday. Wow. I'll be back on Wednesday. Not sure what I'm going to have on this week. And then we'll be back Thursday with the roundtable. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.